So, Esmeralda.
Yes.
The Monkees premiered yesterday, 50 years ago.
Yay.
And I remember, obviously, I don't remember, I was one, but I remember them, you know, in the late 60s or the early 70s when I would watch the reruns all the time. They would show the reruns of the Monkees on Saturday mornings. So it would be like you watch your Saturday morning cartoons, and then right around 11 o'clock or so, I think they would show like back-to-back episodes of the Monkees. Yeah. Now, when did you get into the Monkees, Esmeralda? How did that happen? Because we all know, if you're regular listeners to the show, that you all know that Esmeralda loves the Monkees.
I got real into it when, do you remember when VH1 did the made-for-TV movie on them?
I vaguely remember that, yes.
They did a made-for-TV movie, and then I believe they showed a Behind the Music with them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched both, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing I have ever seen.
So that was it. It was,
and I got real into it.
Mm-hmm.
Real into it. Like, I was on websites, like Monkees fan club websites. And
wow.
I got real into it. I started watching the TV show, and yeah. I even made, in high school, I had a photography class, which is also like we did other things, and I was able to make a mouse pad with the Monkees and like tie-dye in the background.
That's fantastic. You told me that story. I remember that story.
And I still have it. I still have it.
Do you use it? Is it your mouse pad at home?
I don't use it. I have a laptop now.
Oh, okay.
But it's still there. I keep it.
Okay.
It's starting to fade, but yeah.
That's pretty funny. Well, that's great. So the Monkees, and then if I remember correctly, VH1 would show episodes of the show as well.
Yeah. So that whole thing, they did a whole thing about it, and they showed a bunch of episodes too. So that's where I got all my love started.
Your love for the Monkees, you and Marge Simpson.
Yeah.
She got made fun of on the bus because she had a Monkees lunchbox.
I would have backed her up.
Yeah. They don't even play their own instruments. What?
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. All right. Well, here are 11 things that you might not know about the Monkees. Well, you might, Esmeralda, but normal human beings might not. Who didn't go on the Monkey fan club websites and then make mouse pads out of Monkees. Not real Monkees. You didn't make a mouse pad like you got a Monkey and skinned it and made a mouse pad out of it.
No, that's no.
That's
no,
not
no.
What you did. Monkey with two E's is what we're talking about. That Monkey. That kind of Monkey. Now, you know, after you got into the Monkees, Esmeralda, did you get jealous of Marsha Brady during that episode of the Brady Bunch?
No. You know what? He wasn't my favorite.
Oh, Davey wasn't
your
favorite?
Davey wasn't my favorite. My favorite was Mike Nesmith.
Well, sure.
I liked him. And then Peter.
Wow, Peter. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Nesmith is the, you know, if you're going to argue, like, who was the most musically, by far, the most musically talented person in that group, it was by far, it's Nesmith.
Yeah, but he was dreamy.
With his hat?
Yes.
You liked his hat?
His wool hat.
Wow. All right. Maybe there's some Michael Nesmith trivia here in these 11 facts that you don't know about Michael Nesmith. I don't know. We'll find out. So, all right. Well, here's our first fact. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Davy Jones didn't know who the Beatles were the night of their shared Ed Sullivan Show performance. 2.5 years before the Monkees premiered, English heartthrob and tambourine player extraordinaire Davy Jones had his first brush with the four mop tops who, unbeknownst to him, would change his life forever. As a cast member of the Broadway musical Oliver, he played the Artful Dodger, Jones just happened to be performing on the same historic Ed Sullivan Show broadcast featuring the Monkees. As he tells the story, the late Monkee had never heard of the Beatles. He only took interest in them because he wanted to figure out what were making all the girls scream, because he wanted to do that too.
That sounds like Davy.
Have you ever seen footage of him as the Artful Dodger?
I haven't.
Oh, you got to check it out. This was when he was little. Well, he was always little. But this was when he was like little young kid, Davy Jones. And he played the Artful Dodger. And if you actually go back and see that, because I believe that the entire Ed Sullivan Show, the one the Beatles made their appearance on the first time. I believe that entire show is available, so you can see it. So if you want to see them performing, I think one, maybe two songs from Oliver, you can see Davy Jones in his little Artful Dodger outfit, his scarf, and his little hat. So he didn't know who the Beatles were. How about that? Okay, here's another one. The original Monkees casting call ad was riddled with hippie-ish references. The creators of the Monkees TV show, Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider. By the way, Bob Rafelson would go on to direct many movies, many of which were really experimental. His best friend was Jack Nicholson, which explained why Jack Nicholson directed Head, the Monkees movie. Have you seen that movie? I'm sure you have.
Oh, I have, yes.
Jack Nicholson directed that movie. But Rafelson was this experimental filmmaker who was doing really cutting-edge stuff in the early 70s and would go on to be like a really acclaimed and revered American filmmaker. And out of the gate, the first thing he ever did creatively was create the Monkees. So, oddly, none of his movies featured wacky fast motion. I don't understand why that wasn't used in all of his movies. They knew exactly the kind of guys they wanted for their new series. In the ad, spirited Ben Franks types are requested. According to the book Monkey Business, the revolutionary made-for-TV band, Ben Franks was a popular Sunset Strip restaurant where the mods mused over burgers and fries, man. So if you hung out at Ben Franks Burgers, that's the kind of person they wanted to be in the Monkees. The ad also included the line, "Must come down for interview." Per Rafelson in Monkey Business, that was a sly reference on being high. See, you must come down for the interview. Don't, in other words, try not to be high when you're coming back from Ben Franks and your burgers, because those are the guys they want. Yeah. Now, I guess if we read that ad now, we'd be like, what? Ben Franks, what? Ben Franks type? Is that some sort of like... You want him to look like Ben Franklin? And it's a little hip short name for Ben Franklin? Hey, Ben Frank! Yeah!
That's so hipster. Ben Franks.
Oh, man. Ben Franks? I wonder, hey, Dan, can you see if you could find out a little more history about Ben Frank? Now I'm really interested in Ben Franks. You hung out, had burgers, you were hippies, you got high, and you went to Ben Franks, I guess. That was the thing in the 60s. All right. We got a break here. We got weather. We got traffic. We've got more monkey facts. And then we're going to find out, would Esmeralda buy that? It's not unusual to be loved by anyone. Ba-na-na-na-na. It's not unusual to have fun with anyone. So, hey, you guys remember my dad's joke? About 3-4 weeks ago? What was the joke? I had Tom Jones... problem? You think you're Tom Jones? I asked the doctor, is that common? He said it's not unusual. Wait a minute, hold it now. That's totally not the joke he told. I screwed it up. It had something to do with Tom Jones, and it's not unusual. That's all I remember. Hey, you know there's this nasty bug going around. It's a big 6-foot cockroach knocking on people's doors and punching them in the face. I don't know if you knew that. My dad broke that story on Monday morning. Oh man. All right. Hey, we're going to find out, would Esmeralda buy that? So, just getting this ready for Vic. I'm kidding. He's going to come in here and punch me right in the mouth like a 6-foot cockroach. You know, we're talking about the Monkees. Yesterday marked the 50th anniversary of the Monkees. They showed up, and they sold a lot of records, mostly to Marge Simpson and Esmeralda Leon. So now we were just talking about Ben Franks. Dan, you did a little research about Ben Franks. This was a burger place that hippies hung out at, and Bob Rafelson put together this ad and wanted Ben Franks type hippies.
Right. And there is still a version open today, though it seems to be kind of a weird offshoot kind of version of it. But thankfully, actually, Ray called in.
Oh.
And he knows people who actually went there quite a bit.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk to Ray. Hi, Ray.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Good, buddy. What's up?
Nothing. I love your show.
Thank you.
My cousins moved from Cleveland to Los Angeles in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my older cousins, who was born in 1947, he hung out on Sunset Strip. And we went out a couple summers, although I was like a little kid. My older brothers hung with him. Ben Franks was like a kind of, imagine like an all-night diner up on Clark or something.
Mm-hmm.
Where a whole lot of musicians and younger people of the times hung out in.
Got it.
I don't know if you're familiar with the Mothers of Invention.
Oh, sure.
Their very first album, Freak Out.
Okay.
Which was a double album. Some said the first in rock and roll history. Others say Bob Dylan, Blonde on Blonde. It was a matter of weeks about their release.
Okay, all right.
In the tune Help, I'm a Rock, he mentions Ben Franks and all of this.
Zappa then, does?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And, I mean, you can Google lyrics, Help, I'm a Rock, and you'll see it mentioned in there. And one final interesting thing. In the fall of 66, businesses and residents in that area got sick and tired of the kids hanging out there. So they had an ordinance passed that imposed a 10 o'clock curfew, and everybody was annoyed by it. So they scheduled a major rally on a Saturday night, and Peter Fonda and Jack Nicholson, and this is pre-Easy Rider, were both there.
Of course they were.
But that led to the song that we all know very well, For What It's Worth, which is not... That's not an anti-war song. It specifically has to do with the curfew demonstrations. And those demonstrations were very, very close to Ben Franks.
Is that amazing? That's great.
And then, Nick, the final note to tie into what you're talking about.
Yeah.
As you know, Stephen Stills did audition for the Monkees.
Yes, I did know that.
And obviously, the one Monkee, and I'll shut up after this. I'm sorry for pressing.
No, please, Ray. Great.
I forget the two, Rafelson and somebody were the guys who put together the concept and began developing.
It was Bert Schneider.
Was that the other fellow?
Yeah. Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider.
The first Monkee signed and the one they elected to build the group around was Davy Jones, who actually had extensive experience in live theater. And you probably know this. The Beatles' first appearance on Ed Sullivan.
You know, Ray, I guess you just turned on the radio because we talked about that.
I apologize.
No, that's okay. No. We talked about how he was the Artful Dodger and he had no idea who the Beatles were and he was on the same show with them. Yeah.
And then the final thing, and if you said this already, I apologize. When they put the Monkees on, they wanted like one from each, what they felt was genre of pop music. They felt Davy Jones was a British guy. Mike Nesmith was country. Mickey Dolenz was pop or rock, and Peter Tork was the other thing.
Peter Tork was the other thing.
Whatever he was. You had to get him on the show. Supposedly, he's easy to get a hold of and rather friendly.
But. Yeah, that's great. All right, Ray, great call. Thanks so much, sir.
Love your show.
I appreciate it. Wow. Wow,
folk?
That was...
Maybe he's folk?
Yeah, maybe he's folk. Yeah. Peter might be folk. Yeah.
Or the other thing.
He's that other thing. Peter Tork is the other thing. Poor Peter. He was always, in the opening credits, he was always the one dissed.
He's kind of the dummy.
Yeah. But remember in the opening credits, they get his name wrong all the time?
Yeah.
And then, like, they finally get his name right at the very end of the credits, and he goes, oh. You know, like, yes. They finally got it right. One of my favorite songs is the song that they always play over the closing credits of the Monkees.
Oh.
And I'm trying to remember the name of it. In This Generation.
Yeah.
In This Loving Time. Yeah. You know
one of my favorites is the Peter. Yeah, I know which one you're talking. I don't know the name, though.
I'm trying to remember the name.
My favorite, one of my favorites is Auntie Griselda.
Yes.
And he sings it.
That's a great
Peter
song.
Sings it.
That's a great song. Great song. My favorite song by the Monkees. I mean, they have a lot of great songs.
Oh, no, yeah, for
but
sure.
But it is the Nesmith. Listen to the Band is my favorite. That's my favorite Monkee song of all time. One of their original, you know, like actually they wrote that. They started out not writing any of their songs. Neil Diamond wrote like three or four of their four of their songs. And I think Neil Diamond wrote. I know he wrote "I'm a Believer." I think he wrote "Pleasant Valley Sunday," if I'm not mistaken. But they had like a lot. But they no.
Is
you know
Carole
who was
King?
Carole King and Neil Sedaka wrote a couple of songs.
Yeah.
They had like a like a group of amazing songwriters.
Yeah, they were from that
Brill building.
Yes,
yeah. So here's a quick Michael Nesmith fact for you, Esmeralda, that are on this 11 facts. Michael Nesmith attended the celebrity-filled recording session for Sgt. Pepper's song "Day in the Life."
Oh, that makes sense.
The Texas guitarist was indeed there among the cream of the British musical crop in February of '67. He appears at around the 2 minute and 26 second mark in the promotional "Day in the Life" clip, but you have to look sharp. It's a quintessential blink and you'll miss him moment. So for that "Day in the Life" clip that you can see, like the promo clip, he's at the 2:26 mark. So I know Esmeralda's going to cue that up right now. Fly Jam, yes. Bob. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
I think Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart wrote Monkey songs, too.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they had like a bevy of amazing songwriters.
Yes.
Incredible.
Did you know that Michael Nesmith's mother invented liquid paper?
I did know that. Fluid? Yes, she did. She invented liquid paper. Oh, you know what, Bob? Hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, hold on, because we have to hit the news, and I know Bob will have more to say about that. So we want to get to that. We'll take a break. We got the news coming up, and then more monkey facts, and then we'll find out if Esmeralda would buy that. But we got a very specific time frame happening this morning. Between Tom Jones, the monkey talk, and then this, people are going to... Dave Ennett's going to wake up and go, is it 1966 again? He wasn't alive then, though. He's not that old. Right? Dave's 33. 815 area code requested some Herb Alpert. That's a bittersweet samba. Yeah, two for Tuesday, yeah. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How you doing, everybody? We are live in the Allstate studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6. We're going to find out, would Esmeralda buy that? That's coming up in just a few minutes. We're going to finish up our monkey talk. Fly Jam Bob was giving us a little rundown on Mike Nesmith's mom who invented liquid paper. Go ahead, Bob.
Yes, that's a pretty obscure Tijuana Brass song.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Herb Alpert. So now, what was there anything else you wanted to say about the whiteout? No?
Your best friend, I guess, for lawyers, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
But I wonder if they still make colored liquid paper.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'm sure they don't sell anywhere near what they used to because of word processing, though.
Yeah, no question about it. All right.
Hey, did you see that Joe changed the rotation? He's going with Lester on Wednesday now.
Is that right?
Yes.
Ooh. Oh.
So Hamill pitches for his playoff life tomorrow.
Yeah.
If he comes up big, I think he's going for it.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right. All right, thanks, Bob.
Okay.
Take care, buddy. There you go. Mike Nesmith's mom. You knew that, right, Esmeralda, that Mike Nesmith's mom invented the whiteout?
Yes, I did.
Or the liquid paper. What is there a – I know liquid paper is the actual brand name, and I think they just call it whiteout or correcting fluid.
I believe so.
Another. All right, are you ready?
Yes.
Here's another little fact about the monkeys. The monkeys, by the way, it's the 50th anniversary of the monkeys. That's why we're talking about this, and Esmeralda is obsessed. The monkeys managed to squeeze in subversive behavior whenever they could. In the season 2 episode, The Devil and Peter Tork, the boys took on the issue of censorship by slipping in subversive jokes about how, back in 1967, you couldn't say the word hell on network television. The boys talked about hell because Tork's character sold his soul to the devil and getting beeped every time they uttered the word. This leads Mickey Dolenz to observe, you know what's even more scary? You can't say hell on television. And then by the way, hell was bleeped as he said it. Oh, monkey's getting a little bit subversive. You remember that episode where Peter Tork sold his soul?
I don't remember it right now.
Yeah, I don't either. How about this? Monkey Mania of the Monkeys in Paris was staged. In June 1967, the monkeys headed off to Paris for a season 2 episode that would show them being mobbed by French fans. Whether it was because the series hadn't started airing in France or the French audiences just hadn't caught on to the craze, director Bob Rafelson had to be very creative with the squealing girls. The scenes of them running from crowds did not feature anyone chasing them. Two monkeys stepped behind the camera during the show's run. Oh. Director monkey. Toward the end of the second and final season, it was only on two seasons? I mean, of course, that back in those days, that was when a season was like 36 episodes, as opposed to like now, when a season is eight. Toward the end of the second and final season, Peter Tork and Mickey Dolenz were given the opportunity to direct an episode. Tork, using his full name in the credits. Now, do you know his full name, Esmeralda?
No.
It's Peter H. Thorkelson.
Oh, goodness.
Oh. He directed The Monkeys Mind Their Manor, which aired in February of 68. Dolenz then helmed Majekgeo, also known as the Frodis Caper, which became the series finale because they were canceled after that. The series' unofficial finale features not one but two Beatles tunes. The Dolenz-directed episode opens up with a real bang, the intro to Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club band track, and Good Morning, Good Morning. According to Dolenz, it was a big moment because it was the first time the Beatles ever let one of their songs onto another show. In addition, there are two instances where, if you listen closely, Davey is singing the Beatles song Hello, Goodbye to himself. I didn't know that. You got to look for this stuff now, Esmeralda. How about this? There was a very weird Monkees episode where Frank Zappa showed up. It was the 60s. The Monkees were winding down. And Michael Nesmith, according to Randy A. Messengill, in her book Total Control, the Michael Nesmith story, was trying to show the rock community that he was not a kiddie show guy. Nesmith achieved this by not only bringing the Mothers of Invention frontman Frank Zappa onto the Monkees, but by also conducting a bizarre interview with him in which the two men switched roles, which allowed Nesmith, as Zappa, to refer to the Monkees' bubblegum music as banal and insipid. Oh, man.
He wore a big nose, too. Yeah. Prosthetic nose, I remember.
The Monkees outsold the Beatles and the Rolling Stones in 1967. Oh, wow. Yes, you read that correctly. In 1967, the year of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Between the Buttons and More, the Monkees outsold both the Beatles and Rolling Stones combined. That's insane. How about this? Your next one is Liberace once made a strange uncredited cameo in a Monkees episode using the same golden sledgehammer as Frank Zappa. Renowned pianist Liberace was never known for being subtle, so when he showed up on the Monkees season 2 episode Art for Monkees' Sake, a flashy performance was a given, but what people didn't expect to see was the famed entertainer taking a golden sledgehammer to his piano. One could argue that this possibly inspired the aforementioned Frank Zappa appearance from later in the season, in which Zappa proceeded to destroy a car with the same golden sledgehammer. It doesn't seem to be a coincidence now that Michael Nesmith appears in both bits. And then finally, the title that Mickey Dolenz penned tune, Randy Scouse Git, was deemed so offensive in Britain that it had to be renamed. Do you know this one, Esmeralda?
That I did know, yeah.
He wrote his first Monkey tune was Randy Scouse Git for the third album, Headquarters, which he describes in his book about his experiences in England in 1967. Trouble was that even though the title sounds tame to the U.S., over in Britain, it directly translated, according to Dolenz, into something like horny Liverpudlian jerk. For the song's UK release, the drummer chose the title Alternative Title for its alternative title. And it went to number 2 on the British chart. So there you go. There's some Monkey trivia for you, Esmeralda.
Very nice.
A few of those you didn't know, right?
Yeah. No, some of them I didn't know.
Okay. Peter Thorkelson.
Listener who couldn't hang on said Peter, the aforementioned Peter Thorkelson, was a member of either Buffalo Springfield or Fast Eddie and the Go before he joined the Monkees. Then they were a precursor to the Mothers of Invention.
Oh.
So obviously he had some
connection. There's
music pedigree.
There's a lot of connection stuff happening here, you know, with reading these monkey facts and hearing all these other things.